The Story Factor Podcast, Episode 8. Forget media training. Add a story and some suspense.
Welcome to the Story Factor Podcast with Annette Simmons.
Story is the oldest form of influence in human history.
Annette is the author of The Story Factor, Territorial Games, and Whoever Tells the Best Story Wins.
When you stimulate human emotions with a story, you point those emotions in a certain direction.
Now Annette is here to help you inspire, influence, and persuade through the art of storytelling.
No one will complain if you substitute a story for a PowerPoint slide.
Notice I'm not using PowerPoint and there's no handouts. My goal is that this actually be valuable enough that you remember it.
And now your host. She actually once used poetry when facilitating a group from the Pentagon. Here's Annette Simmons.
Welcome to the Story Factor Podcast. I'm Annette Simmons, and I really believe that no matter who you are or what you do, you will get more out of life by becoming a better storyteller. Hey, poetry works. You just have to slip it in there before anyone realizes you're quoting poetry. Today we'll be talking to someone who teaches business executives how to slip a story in when it might not be what's expected, but it's exactly what's needed. As a matter of fact, her company is named after a poet, the Roman epic poet Ovid, the author of Metamorphoses and other epics that still influence Western art and literature to this day. Before we get started, I would love to hear your story. You can get in touch with me on Twitter, at The Story Factor, or send me an email, Annette at Annette Simmons, or you can just leave a voice message on the Story Factor feedback line at 318-479-1077. Our guest this week is Jane Prager. Jane teaches at Columbia University, and she provides media coaching to CEOs and top executives, preparing them for interviews and business presentations. She helps them weave stories into dry facts and figures to enliven and enlighten their presentations and their reputation. Her company is Ovid, Inc., OVIDINC.com, and you can find out more about her at that website. Welcome to the podcast. This is Annette Simmons, and this is the Story Factor Podcast. And we're joined by Jane Prager. Actually, is that how you pronounce your name?
Yes.
Jane Prager. So hello.
Hi.
And we're going to talk about storytelling. Can you tell the audience pretty much everything about you in, you know, a couple of sentences?
just briefly, I have been a speech, presentation and media coach for the last 20 years, working out of New York City, working with a lot of nonprofits and individuals and also companies. And for the last 10 years, I've been on the faculty of Columbia University, where I teach in the Strategic Communications Program.
Wow. What is your educational background?
Actually, I was trained, My background is in filmmaking, actually, and I started my career as a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker, and did that for about 13 years. And when I left filmmaking and became a media trainer, I realized that I could bring all of the skills I learned in filmmaking about narrative, about theme, about characters and plot and suspense. I could bring that over to the world of business and the nonprofit world and put them, you know, put those same principles to work because they were noticeably absent, particularly in the business world. So I really kickstarted my new career using everything I had learned as a filmmaker.
I'm sure so many people were incredibly appreciative.
Well, interestingly, one of my early clients when I was a media trainer came to me with what he thought was a huge delivery problem, in that he was a management consultant in Washington, D.C. He said people would fall asleep within 10 minutes of his beginning his talk. Said by the end of his talk, everybody was asleep. He didn't know what he was doing wrong. And he sent me some video to look at before he flew to New York for media training. And I looked at the video, and he really did not seem bad to me. He had a deep, booming voice. He moved around the room. He looked at the audience. I mean, he didn't have any of the typical delivery problems, and I just couldn't figure out what was wrong. So when he came to my office with my camera person ready to roll, I started looking at his speech, his talk, and I read through a page of it and my eyes glazed over.
Right.
And I read through it again and my eyes glazed over. And I just thought, my God, this is filled with jargon. I don't know what he's talking about. No wonder everybody's going to sleep. So for the next 3 hours, we just sat there and I reworked his speech as if it were a documentary film. We gave it a strong thesis, a point of view. We added stories to it. We made it suspenseful. And at the end, we had no time to put him on camera. And I said, you know, go and try this out and come back to New York in 3 weeks. We'll put you on camera. Needless to say, I did not hear from him week one. I did not hear from him week two. Week three, I called him up and he said, I don't think I need media training anymore because I've been giving this talk and people have actually been clapping and no one's been going to sleep. And that was really an epiphany for me at that moment in my career, because so much of media training is based on delivery and performance. And yet, what I realized is that when you fix content, many, probably upwards of 50% of all delivery problems disappear. Because they're really content problems. They're a problem with the content not being relevant or compelling to the audience. And that starts a negative feedback loop.
You know, I found that people who have what would traditionally be considered really bad speaking style, you know, shove their hands in their pockets, that sort of stuff, when their content is right, it sometimes actually works for them.
Yes, I think that's true. And it allows you to be more authentically yourself,
right,
rather than trying to be some image of what you think is a charismatic or dynamic performer.
Yeah, which is inauthentic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was the big shift for me. The initial shift is like, wow, you know, really so much of delivery and performance is about good storytelling and good presenting and just basic good communicating.
Tell me where how you were trained in terms of storytelling.
Well, I think I wasn't really formally trained. I was an English major. And I went to graduate school in English, but I was a teaching fellow in film and film theory and film appreciation. So that was really my training in storytelling, was just being immersed in the world of film. And then it was just trying to make films and realizing films needed a story to succeed. You know, I was making documentaries and training films, and I was taking all that raw material, thousands of hours of footage, and trying to craft it into stories. And if you do that for about 10 years, you learn storytelling.
Right. I was talking with Karen Dietz, and we were talking about having trained with the traditional oral storytelling as opposed to film. And one of the things that has been my experience, my background is also in adult education. And so studying adult education, it's just not pedagogy. It's about really social movements. Adult education has traditionally been, and you know, when it's in big shifts, has been about getting people to, you know, plant food in a more efficient way, to save water, you know, conservation, civil rights. And so our storytelling has tended to look for a call to action, like mm-hmm. at the end of it, and not even the moral tales, you know, you're trying to change somebody's
yes.
behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, I would argue, I mean, and this is maybe a radical position, but I would argue that almost all presentations benefit from being directed towards an immediate action goal.
Oh, I agree.
So I'm in complete agreement with that approach. And that's the first thing I ask people is, what do you want them to do after, immediately after hearing your presentation or your story? What do you want people to do?
I wonder, we were wondering, and now I get to ask you, which is cool. We were wondering if some of the principles that go into entertainment, which really wasn't your background, the documentaries I think are different, but if you have an opinion on this, I'd really be interested. If there were some principles that had to do with entertainment that didn't necessarily transfer to our call to action storytelling.
I think the way I think about entertainment is maybe different. I think of entertainment as something that's relevant and compelling to the audience and that immediately grabs my attention and keeps me there.
Right.
Like to me, that's, quote, entertainment. So I think if you define it that way, then yes, the principles of entertainment do in fact apply to business and nonprofits. I think the difference is that in business and nonprofits who are using presenting and storytelling for advocacy, it's that difference of having the goal of moving people to action. To me, that's the fundamental distinction between entertainment and strategic storytelling, which is what I teach, that the end goal of that story is to change the way people think, feel, and behave.
What do you teach in terms of, and our podcast listeners, I'm looking to leave them with something that they can do differently as a result of listening. In strategic storytelling, do you have a set of steps that you teach, or what are the principles?
Well, the first principle is really understanding your audience, understanding what you want them to do, understanding why they're not doing it right now, what's getting in the way, understanding what might motivate or inspire them to do what you'd like them to do. So the first step, and that's one that amazingly most presenters miss, is who are you talking to?
Right.
Right. And what do you want them to do? And it should be something that's immediately actionable, not like a huge change the world action goal, but something they can do tomorrow.
Right.
Something that they want to do and they feel they can do. So I call it the little A, the little action goal. Gear your presentation or your storytelling to your little action goal. That's number one. I think another, so that's the first thing that you do is really define and understand your audience. And then you think about what is the central message, the one point that I need my audience to take away. That's another challenge for people who are used to loading everything into their presentations right. or their stories. It's like, give it a backbone, give it one message, and strip away everything that doesn't support that.
Editing is everything.
Yeah, editing is everything. So, in other words, your presentation becomes an argument, right? It becomes a way of substantiating a particular point of view, as opposed to, here's a bunch of interesting information that you might like. That's really the strategic part of it. So it's using your data to really make a specific point that then will drive the audience to take action.
And then where does the story come in?
The story comes in once you have your basic argument and your theme, then you have to find a way to make all of that information sticky. And that's when I give my students and many of my clients Chip and Dan Heath's book, Made to Stick.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure I've sold thousands of copies of that book as well, because it's really, it's not about strategy, but it is about how to make information sticky. Right. It's
yeah.
it's using metaphors and analogies and surprise and storytelling. Right. And then that's where your book comes in. It's one of the ways of making a presentation or a media interview really rich. You find the stories that then can support your theme. That's when you give, in other words, you put the flesh on the bones during that process. And the storytelling becomes a means of carrying that message.
So the metaphors, analogies, and surprise. Tell us a little bit more about surprise.
Well, I think one of the big problems that both my nonprofit and my corporate clients have when trying to introduce storytelling into their culture is that the stories tend to be predictable. And a story, as you know, that isn't this predictable just doesn't fire up our neurons. I mean, it just doesn't get us going. If we know the ending, we lose interest. So there really needs to be an element of surprise, of the unexpected, of irony, if you really want your story to be strong.
Now, let's say that one of the things that I talk about is that your story wants to touch on a universal truth.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has been forgiven, everybody's been betrayed, etc. And when I went to documentary film kind of camp, if you will, I was at SALT over in Portland, Maine.
Mm-hmm.
I did a week there and learned so much. One of the things that we were instructed to do is to take this, you know, the most powerful emotional moment and move it to the front so that it grabbed people. That's in a 2-minute video. Tell me, do you ever recommend that?
Yes, I do. I mean, we all know it's sort of a basic truth that you need to really grab people in the first 30 seconds, you know, whether it's a presentation, a speech, a media interview. And story is often a very powerful way to start. I would argue that you still want to sprinkle those powerful emotional moments throughout.
Yeah.
So that you don't lose people.
Yeah, my tendency would be to save that emotional, you know, powerful emotional moment, maybe 3/4 through. Not that I don't want every 10 minutes or so. I definitely am going to have a story every 10 minutes or so. Do you have any sort of, you know, expectation for yourself on that?
Well, I mean, if we're going back to documentary films, I tend to put my big emotional moments or my best footage at the very end.
Right.
You know, for example, I have an end to one of my documentaries on domestic violence that's just a literal heart stopper. You know, it's just like shocking, surprising, revealing. It's one of my favorite things in the film, and I could even send you a clip of that, but because I still use that to teach. It's like a mini story.
Right.
But I think you put that at the end, but you can open with a story to grab people's interest, to establish the theme or message. And in a documentary, you know, there is that message of the call to action, and ideally there is that higher truth.
Right.
Right. That's also a part of it.
I saw some research that compare the retention of information, you know, with a story, without a story, and then the other one was just straight data.
I'm just wondering, are you thinking of that study that was in the book, The Influencers, where they gave the MBA students the information and they put it in the story, embedded it in the story of a little old winemaker?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they tested them weeks later and they had
right.
a much higher retention.
That's exactly what I'm thinking about.
Of the fact. Is that the same one you're thinking
yes.
about?
Yes.
They had a much higher retention of the facts that were in the story. I mean, I thought what was really interesting about that study is not only did they remember more of the facts, but they found them more credible. The facts in the story were more credible, I guess, because they were in context, right? Because somebody was...
Well, the thing is, how much context is a winemaker to, I don't remember what the subject was that they were supposed to retain, what information they were supposed to retain, but I don't think it was, you know, little old winemaker data. You know what I mean?
No, it was some kind of basic business data,
right.
I think. Right.
That's exactly why I'm asking the question. Have you ever done that? Because I haven't.
You mean well, I think the story has to be relevant. I mean, if you're talking about presentations or media interviews, I think the stories have to be relevant to the audience. But then, yes, I would recommend that you embed your data in a story if you want people to remember it.
My presentations have a lot of stories in them. And so it had just never occurred to me to take this one overarching kind of umbrella story to try to keep the beginning.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I understand. Okay, so you're talking about like a narrative arc of one story for the whole presentation.
Right.
I see what you're saying. I think it works for certain kinds of presentations. So, for example, let's say you're introducing a bold, radical new idea to a client. Instead of saying, hey, look, right up top, here's our great new bold radical idea, you can lead them on the journey that you took to get to, which is something you talk about.
Right.
And that becomes the narrative arc for the presentation. So that is a presentation as story if you're taking somebody through a whole journey.
So everybody knows that they want stories. How do you help people find stories?
You know, that's really the most challenging part of it all, I think. I think step one is really developing a story antenna so that, like a muscle almost, so that when you see one or you hear one, in the course of your everyday working life, you write it down. Because if you ask somebody, tell me a story about that project you were on, or tell me a story about what happened with that client, they won't come up with it.
Right.
You know, that said, I tend to ask what I call the superlative questions, the best, most, least, all of the questions that get people to focus on a moment when they felt most likely to fail or most challenged, or what was the time you went above and beyond the call of duty, those kinds of questions. But I still think that people have to almost build a storytelling culture so that when something happens, it's like, oh, that's a good story. Let's put that down. Let's remember that one. And to begin building their story bank.
I completely agree that story antenna is something that for me developed because I attended the National Storytelling Festival so much and went to storytelling training. It happened without my intention. And like you said, it's a culture of storytelling. One of the things that I want to do when I work with clients is to have them come up with a lot of stories really quickly so that they experience the benefit of stories, and that actually automatically creates their storytelling antenna. Do you have a way to get, you know, kind of jumpstart that in addition?
Well, I do also have people tell stories, like 2-minute stories. Those tend to be more personal stories, just to give them that experience of quickly telling a story in 2 minutes, because one of the obstacles to storytelling is, oh, it takes so long to tell a story. Well, actually, no, you can tell a great story in less than 2 minutes. Here, let's do it now. I think that the harder part is finding and crafting the business stories, taking those very pedantic, very predictable case studies, for example. This is one way I do it, and turning them into a case story. Which is very different in that the case story profiles the people, where the case study is really more about the product.
You sent me one about NASA that was fantastic. Is there a way that the podcast people can have a look at that? Because that's a great example.
Yeah, that's a white paper that I wrote about how one company transformed their case study about NASA into this really riveting case story about NASA. And it's really delineated. If people write to me, I'd be happy to send it to them.
And how would they do that?
They could just send it to Jane, J-A-N-E, at Ovid Inc. That's my company. O-V-I-D, as in Ovid, the storyteller. O-V-I-D Inc., I-N-C.com. OvidInc.com.
That's great. Yes.
And I'd be happy to send it to people.
You said that you're working on a new website. I think that people really would appreciate reading this because it's one of the best examples I've seen. It is the best example I've seen of taking a business story piece by piece and turning it into, a business, a case study, turn it into a case story.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's very, you know, I think our responsibility to create examples so that people are stimulated is so important. We talk about story and it's boring, but when we tell stories, it's so much more interesting.
And I should just add that what I'm trying to do now, and if anyone out there in your audience has that, is I am actually actively collecting business stories. I mean, stories that people use within their culture to inspire, to motivate, to tell to clients, to, I mean, I'm actually trying to create a bank of those kinds of examples.
If you have any business stories that you want to share, Jane would love to have them. You can email her at jane@ovidinc.com. She might even use it to teach her class at Columbia. So that was Jane Prager. Next week, we're going to go into more depth discussing the use of personal stories in business. Personal stories are more appropriate and more effective than you might think. Again, I'd love to continue the conversation. I'm on Twitter @TheStoryFactor, or you can email me at Annette@AnnetteSimmons.com. This has been the Story Factor Podcast. I hope you'll come back and join us next time.